Good evening. The first item of business tonight is the public hearing on proposed local law number A of 2011, amending the county code in relation to road preservation by temporarily excluding certain traffic that would materially injure county roads. I have a number of people signed up. When we're finished with these folks, if anybody else would like to speak, you'll have your chance. Three-minute time limit, and Kathy Covert here will help you keep track of your time. First, Gene Losey, and then Bill Padulka.
Thank you. I'm a resident of Ellis Hollow Road, 1735, down in the dip. And I'm here to speak about having the shoulders colored as was part of the original plan.
Gene, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute. The first thing we're doing is a public hearing on the road preservation law about truck traffic. Okay?
So we can't hear you.
We can't hear you.
Really?
What we're doing, having a public hearing on the road preservation law now, and the general comments will come later.
Excuse me.
Thank you, Peter. You can't hear me?
No.
All right.
Good.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, the first item is the road preservation law. So if you intended to speak on something else, let me know when I call your name, and we'll put you in the regular public privilege of the floor. Okay, so Gene, you'll go on first, right? Put Gene on the... All right, Michelle, the first speaker for the public hearing is Bill Padulka, and then Dennis Mix.
Yep. All right, so my name is Bill Padulka. I'm a resident of Caroline in the southeast corner of the county, and I'm here to speak in support of the amendment to the county code relating to road preservation. And I think one thing that most folks here will probably agree, no matter what side of the issue they're on, is that we don't want the county taxpayers to be winding up footing the bill for a lot of damage to the roads if that occurs with one particular group that could be identified. And we're going to differ on some of the details. And if anything, I'm a little concerned that the trigger level of 1,000 trips of a certain weight is a bit high, but I'm counting on the county engineer, highway engineer, giving some good advice on that. But that's my one concern. I will note that the law is fairly flexible, giving a lot of discretion to the county highway manager, and so I'm hoping that person will certainly monitor how things are going and raise fees, raise bonds, et cetera, as needed to make sure that the county taxpayers are not held footing the bill. We're all here because, of course, this is being prompted in part because of the advent of grass drilling using hydraulic fracturing, which requires lots of truck trips with water. And one thing I want to make sure is clear is that this amount of traffic and the road damage is real. And so I have a little video clip we're going to show if the technology is going to work that we had working earlier for the balance of my time. And this comes from Pennsylvania, a place called Pine Creek Valley. And it looks like it is not coming on. Okay, so Pine Creek Valley is in Pennsylvania, Tioga County, just over the border. If you go south from Hammondsport, over the border into Pennsylvania, that's where you get to. So let's hit the power.
That's too bad. It was working a minute ago.
All right, so this is what's really happening. And there's one fellow who will sort of lead you through what the truck traffic is like around his town. And we can play about just over 2 minutes of it. That'd be great.
It's coming. Bear with us.
Okay. So if you could bring that back to the beginning. Great. Thank you.
Traffic, that road in ruin.
or do not follow, what choice do I have? My count of the truck traffic totals about 50 to 60 every hour, and that includes triaxles, 18-wheelers, and pickup trucks.
Spread the information about what all is involved in their Marcellus Shale gas operation until it affects the environment.
I feel like my rights have been absolutely ignored. I don't feel individual rights have been taken into account.
This is just to begin with. We currently have less than 50 working relatives there. I'm supposed to have thousands of them. I wanted to live here, but I wanted to grow old here.
That's good. You can stop there. So the audio was a little unclear. I want to make sure that that was for a development of 50 wells in that area. And, of course, as you noted, many more, up to thousands, are anticipated. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Dennis Mix, and then Catherine Halton. Thanks, Michelle.
I'm Dennis Mix with Mix Brothers. My brother and I have a trucking operation in Freeville. We've been in the town of Dryden all of our life. The report that the gentleman just showed, I can understand everyone's concern on that. One of the first things that comes to mind is the 1,000 load limit that the county's proposing is much too low. I don't think people realize the volume of truck traffic that exists now, especially on the Cornell jobs and so forth, and small to large residential jobs. 1,500 loads a week or every 24 hours, it was said, would show that the 1,000 load limit is way too low. I am very concerned that this will really affect my brothers and my trucking operation. I really think that choking down and more regulations that you will put on us will really affect us being able to efficiently plan our routes and bid jobs. I don't think that you realize that eliminating a county road from a job will really eliminate people from being able to even compete, because you're going to have owners of the big projects that if they have to bond the road, they won't even consider it if there's another supplier that can supply the job without bonding the road. They just won't take the time on it to do that. And like I said, we're really concerned that it's going to really definitely affect our business. And we think that the 1,000 load limit is too low. We would, we would accept or be pleased with a 2,500 load limit on that. So that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Dennis. Catherine Halton and then Don Barber.
Hello. My name is Catherine Halton. I'm on the Dandytown Board, and I have been working with Don and other people to get on the TCOG Road Subcommittee to get a road law passed, and Danby has contracted with Delta Engineering to do that. But what I wanted to say tonight is that I think that we're all aiming at the same thing. We're all aiming in our efforts to do this for a road use agreement, for some kind of agreement to be made between the applicant for a permit to drill and for the towns. And I think that we're coming from different directions, but I think we're all aiming for the same thing. The goal is to prevent the costs of large industrial development projects to end up increasing the taxes of the local residents. And I think that's what what we're doing this for. It's taken a long time, and I think that the issue that's made it take a long time is the thresholds, which he just spoke to. I think it's very different to try to figure out how you can catch the very large industrial projects, which are going to have very large impacts on our roads, and the things that are going on all the time. And that's why it's taken so long to come to this. But I hope that nobody wants to impact local businesses, but on the other hand, we don't want our roads destroyed. So I just want to say I want to thank Don for chairing the subcommittee and for educating all of us who don't know anything about roads to study this, and I hope that you will pass this law. And one of the things that I've kind of come to understand as we're working on our law in Danby is that we are going to have the experience of Tioga Broome and Chemung County to look at, and that these roads probably, these rules, these laws that we pass will probably be changed a little bit as we see what happens in other places in New York State. I don't think that Pennsylvania's situation is quite the same. So I think we're going to pass a law and knowing that we're going to be changing little bits and pieces of it as we see what happens within New York State. So I hope you will pass this law. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. Don Barber, then Marie McCray.
Good evening. I'm wearing several hats today. One is as the Caroline Town Supervisor and one is as co-chair of TCOG. And I want to thank the legislature for bringing this law forward. It's been a work in progress for a long time, and I'm glad that the county is showing leadership on this issue. And in general, I support this law, but I have a couple of comments I'd like to share. First, the basis of this law being in Vehicle Traffic Law 1650 is exactly where it should be. All the research that's been done by TCOG says that that's a good basis for it. So I compliment you on using that. One of the concerns I have is with the definition of high-frequency, high-impact traffic. I've spent a bit of time with Lynn Irwin, who, if you don't know him, you should actually get to know him before you vote on this law. He is head of the Cornell Local Roads. He spent a lot of time talking with TCOG about truck traffic, and what I understand is that an 18-wheeler fully loaded would run 26 ton and would be under your 30-ton limit. Also, if you are running a 10-ton or 10-wheeler, then it's close to max at 30-ton, being close to full. So someplace along the line, the decision on 1,000 trucks and 30-ton limit should be an engineering decision and not a political decision, because we're talking about a road, and the road is a structure, and it's not a political device. So I'm assuming that the county engineers have helped you with that. But just to give you an example, a 10-wheeler at 29-ton delivered to the site is 3.43 easels, and easels are equivalent single axle loads, which is an engineering term that you may have heard bantered about. When it comes back, it's 27 easels, so it's a total of 3.7 easels per trip. Spend 1,000 trips would be 3,700 easels. And I'm suggesting that you consider easels as opposed to truck trips as a way to really get a handle on the project, because even a car wears a road. No one's near as much as a truck. They all wear, and that's what we're talking about, protecting the road. I wanted to compliment you on the bonding part of your law. The bonding does two things. One is it will push other municipalities to do something similar, because it's going to be easier for the developer to run a town road or a village road or a city road if they don't have to be on a county road if there's no bonding. The other thing I would suggest for you is that if you decide to move ahead with this law, and we can encourage the developer to go into a road use agreement, and they are willing to, on a regular basis, keep the road up in a safe travel condition, like within 48 hours after a defect has been identified, the amount that they would need to bond for would be significantly less than a complete road rebuild. And so that's the way, through a road use agreement, which I think is the way we'd all like to go, that you will be directing them. So your law actually works in that manner, and I congratulate you for thinking of that. I'm hoping that you will share haul routes from this local law with other municipalities as so that we know where the truck traffic might be in case we have a law or a policy that we're working with. And finally, under Section 412, if someone is running these roads and does not have a permit, the legislature needs to think of a strategy of how you're going to get them into compliance. That's not articulated in the law. It's a policy decision you'll need to make. So I'm hoping you'll follow up with your work that you're doing right now and think about that policy. How are you going to get a non-permitted user that's running close to 1,000 trucks in the door to work with you? And I know there are ways to do it, but you need to think of that policy before you step into this. Thank you so much. And again, thank you for showing the leadership on this issue.
Thank you, Don. Marie McRae and then Bruno Schickel.
Good afternoon. I'm Marie McRae. I live in Dryden. And I'm here also in support of the road ordinance. I think it's very important that we have something in place so that the burden doesn't land on the taxpayers. I am concerned with the definition of high-frequency, high-impact truck traffic. I don't see a time on that. And absent a time, the 1,000-truck limit seems to me easy to get around. I also, as Don said, wonder about the 30-ton truck limit. I'd like to see it lower. I'd like to see the 1,000-truck trip limit lower so that we catch more of these jobs. And thank you very much for once again giving us an opportunity to comment on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Marie. Bruno Schickel, then Henry Kramer.
Thank you very much. I would like to speak in favor of the intention of this law, but as it's crafted, I think that it needs some revisions. I don't think it's ready. And I think the main thing is there's going to be a lot of unintended consequences. Right now, as it's crafted, and by the way, the whole issue about the weight of a truck, a 10-wheeler, which is your standard dump truck, loaded, is about 35 tons. So it will be over the limit of 30 tons loaded. So just to clarify that. I just spoke with Dennis Mix about that. The bottom line is, if you take a well pad, which is, let's face it, everybody's going after the gas companies here, which is fine. If you take a well pad, the construction of the well pad, the material that has to be brought in, a couple feet of material at a minimum, plus all the activity to drill a well, you're going to be probably over 3,000 truck trips to do that. And that's why Dennis Mix suggested 2,500 truck trips, which I would agree with. I think that's a threshold which will essentially eliminate all of largely all the incidental job sites around the county, which I think is your intention. I don't think you're intending to affect a lot of sort of the larger residential or the smaller commercial projects. That's going to get after sort of the more extraordinary events if you put it up at that level. And that's what I'd encourage you, and I would hope that someone would be willing to amend that law to bring it to 2,500. The other part of this and the other unintended parts of it is I really think you got to worry about the loss of sales tax revenue as it's currently constructed. You're putting all the aggregate suppliers and the truckers that happen to be in Tompkins County. And let's say they were going to send material out of county to Tioga, Broome, or down to Pennsylvania. You are putting them, as it's currently written, you would be requiring them to leave the county with material to another county to bond the road. And that will immediately put them at a competitive disadvantage. You will for sure lose sales tax revenue if that stays the way it's currently constructed. And right now, these aggregate suppliers are supplying pavements going out of county, aggregates going out of county currently. And I think you really need to think about that, and I don't know that that's really been thought out. The other thing that you're going to lose is not only sales tax revenue, but you're also going to lose the jobs, like a company like Dennis Mix is employing people, keeping his people busy and working, and you're going to affect that as well. So I think, again, I agree with the intention. I have no problem. I fully support going after this and preventing impact to the roads or making the people pay for it. Absolutely. But I'm concerned about, again, the unintended consequences. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruno. Henry Kramer and then Catherine Wagner.
Henry Kramer from Ellis Hollow Road, town of Dryden. I'm here today neither to speak particularly for or against this ordinance, but to talk about it a little bit. If you have not been down to Pennsylvania and seen what's going on in the northern tier of Pennsylvania, I highly recommend the members of the board and members of the public spend a day down in the northern tier of Pennsylvania. I did that recently. We took a look at things like truck traffic. One of the things that surprised me was that even if you looked at the video before, the size of the trucks, which from all the hoopla about this, I expected were really going to be enormous, were not. They were the size of like dump trucks that you saw, those in the video. A number of the tanker trucks we saw down there were about the same size as those used by the people that pump your septic tank, and there weren't a great number of them. So the idea that you're going to have massive truck traffic all the time just wasn't borne out, and we covered about 60 or 70 miles of northern Pennsylvania in the course of that day. The second thing was we also noticed a lot of road repairs that had been done in Pennsylvania by the energy companies. And some of the roads that they improved were very nice indeed, as good as the repairs that have been done on Ellis Hollow Road, which are also very nice. The other concern I have about this law is that it be truly neutral and not pick out a particular industry. Now, New York state law does give this legislature the right to pass road regulation. That's not in dispute here, as the bans in the various towns are. So you do have the authority to pass road regulation, but it is required by law to be neutral. And as you craft a law and you attempt to be neutral, at the same time, you have the problem that Bruno Schickel just raised of a law of unintended consequences. And that means that you have to be very careful in crafting this law, that you're not banning activities that we don't intend to reach, in the sense of making it more difficult for Tompkins County businesses to do business. And yet, if you make it specific enough to cover only the trucks that are involved with fracking and energy development, then you will not have a neutral law. So that's the dilemma that I think you face. And I think as you go through this process, you need to take a look at this ordinance again, as some of the speakers have mentioned, and make sure that you're not going to hurt Tompkins County businesses. And if at the end of that, you still can't write a neutral law, then you shouldn't write a law at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. Catherine Wagner is the last person signed up.
Hello. I wanted to speak in support of the law, but I had a few things I wanted to mention along the way. Basically, I am a resident on Ellis Hollow Road, and I've been watching a large amount of time, materials, work, and so on that's gone into the repair of that road, which was in very bad shape, even though it had not had all that much truck traffic on it. And it just gives one a bit of a sense of what will be required if our roads are damaged by the fracking trucks. The experience I've been told down in Arkansas is that Arkansas has a severance tax, unlike New York and Pennsylvania. And I've been told that the severance tax, the amount of money that they had to spend on the road repairs there were multiple times the amount that came in on the severance tax. So you're talking about large amounts of money due to the fracking going on. Now, I've had questions about the trips and the amount of weight and so on, but I'm far from an expert, and I will leave others to speak about that, although I did have questions about the 1,000 trips without any time frame involved, and I wasn't sure that made a lot of sense. I also was wondering, when one talks about non-permanent, how do you really define that? When they're fracking a well, there's the fracking, but then there's also the compressors, the pipelines, things like this, a whole infrastructure that will exist for quite a length of time. So I think one has to be very careful how you phrase the non-permanent versus, in other words, you don't want to kind of open the door that they could claim that they are non-permanent because they're actually going to frack this several times over a period of years and things like that. In listening to what was already said, I also, of course, have concern about making sure that it isn't written in a way that people like the gentleman who spoke earlier on are hurt by this. This is clearly not something we want. One other thing that came to mind was the issue of bonding, and it says something about either the money had to be paid up front or some other guarantees given. The experience in other places is that many of these drilling companies, at least a significant number, have declared bankruptcy. And so the county does not want to have to go chasing after these companies after the fact and see if you can get money from them. You really need to have the money up front and secure on deposit, and then if it's appropriate, give them some of it back later. But you don't want to be in a situation of trying to get the money out of them after the fact. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak on this topic as part of the public hearing? All right, I'll just mention that all the comments that have come in over the weeks on this are part of the record and have been considered by the legislature as well. And I'll close the public hearing and open the August 16th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chuck?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAfee?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Fryer?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
15 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
I will like to tell the public that we have a number of items to go through in order on our agenda, but when we get to the action items. Frank, if I can ask that the Health and Human Services Committee report go after a couple of other items. And from there, probably we'll take the facilities report, so we do, Carol, both of your items, and then go to the COFA topic. All right. Carol, you've got two of them. Okay. All right. So a public privilege of the floor. This is Liz. Okay. Again, 3 minutes to speak. Jean Losey and then Janelle King.
Thank you. Jean Losey from Ellis Hollow. And I want to say thank you for the support of the project to reconstruct Ellis Hollow Road. It's been certainly long indeed, and I appreciate it. However, I would also like to speak to the completion of the project as originally planned, which included the coloring of the shoulders to mitigate the speed of the traffic on the road. And it is now, I must say, it's a beautiful road, and it also is a beautiful road to zip along. And I live just below Thomas Road, which has been improved for some time. So we were just beyond the construction, the one-way construction. And as the road began to be completed and things began to disappear and it was easier to go more quickly down the road, the speed of the cars going by our property increased and increased. And now it's back up to who knows what. Where I live, 40 mile an hour zone. It's going down a hill. There's very little speed control or enforcement, and given the current economic situation, there probably isn't a likely chance that this is something that can be increased to control the speed. So I have been, in the past 3 weeks, working out in my yard, close to the street, and have been able to really get a sense of what is happening in terms of the speed. And all I can do is say thank you for the project and ask that you complete the project as intended, which we hope will mitigate some of the speed and make life more enjoyable on our rural, quiet road. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. Janelle King and then Maxine Nichols.
Hi, my name is Janelle King. I live on Hartwood Road, which is a dead-end road off of Ellis Hollow. And I think it's imperative that these shoulders are colored because it's a proven way to help slow down traffic. This was a major concern when we were talking about repairing the road anyway, was that we were afraid people were going to drive faster down it because there weren't all these potholes in it. And it's really important for families who walk and bike on the road. I mean, my mom bikes on the road, I bike and walk on the road, and my sister, who's in high school, has to catch the bus off the road. And, I mean, I can tell you that multiple times before the construction even happened, cars flew past stopped buses, which is a big safety concern. And I'm afraid that now that, you know, the road is, we love the road, it's very nice, but I'm afraid that people are going to go fast on it. Even during the construction, there were people, once the road was paved, even though it was one way, there were people going faster than the 25 mile an hour. I mean, I saw people going probably at least 45. And people were going wrong ways. So there's always a traffic problem there. But I understand this is more of a issue for respective police departments, but when my family has spoke to them about it, they said that coverage during these times, such as bus schedules and stuff like that, would not be possible without paying overtime to the police officers. So to me, that seems like a more additional cost to the county budget than just this one-time fee to pay to color the sides, which has been proven to slow down because it makes the road look more narrow. It was also agreed that this would be done by at the beginning of the project if they couldn't widen the roads. So I ask you to just please consider this additional funds to complete this portion of the project that was presented to us at the pre-project meetings and originally approved to be completed. I think this will really help make the roads safer and help to slow down traffic. So thank you.
Thank you, Janelle. Maxine Nichols, and then Satomi Hill. Is Maxine Nichols here?
It's hard to hear you, Maxine. You ready for the COFA?
Sure.
I'm Maxine Nichols, and I live in the town of Dryden, and I serve on the Office for the Aging Advisory Committee for over 5 years. I'm also part of the Friendly Visitor Program for almost 15 years, therefore I feel I can speak to the work of the Office for the Aging. The typical seniors we serve are frail, they're vulnerable, they're of limited income, some are from rural areas, some no longer drive, but always with many needs. We should respect the challenges they face. I believe that the Brown Road location would present a great hardship for many. Our work is vital. COFA is very critical to the quality of life of thousands of seniors in our county. COFA does need to be centrally located to serve these clients. As long as I've been associated with COFA, and I think it goes back farther than that, much time and effort has been spent trying to find the ideal permanent location for our offices. We, as a committee, were kind of jubilant when the Carpet Bazaar building was found, and it is my understanding that you purchased the building for the sole purpose of housing the Office for the Aging offices. 1 in 10 citizens in Thompson's County is age 65 or older, and the seniors are their fastest growing segment of our population. So we should be thinking wisely, not just about today's needs, but future needs as the boomer generation grows older. The Carpet Bazaar building remains the best option for COFA. It fits our needs. It is centrally located, it's accessible, and is it permanent? answer to our question. I respectfully urge you to reaffirm your commitment to your original plans for COFA for the sake of our elderly, family, friends, neighbors, and community members who depend on the Office for the Aging. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Maxine. Satomi Hill and then Natasha Tall. Satomi. Satomi and then Natasha. You really can't hear me? What?
I can't hear you.
What's going on?
Good evening. My name is Satomi Hill. I live in the city of Ithaca. And I have been living here for the past 35 years. When my husband got the job in the NCR, since then. When we moved here, I mapped out everything within walking distance, such as grocery stores, doctor's office, dentist, banks, laundromat, etc. Why? I don't drive. I wanted to be able to do things without driving, and I was able to do so pretty well. When the CVS pharmacy on the Commons closed, I had an option of going to Rite Aid on the Meadow Street. When Woolworth on the Green Street closed, I went to Kmart. Now that a Kmart is closing, I have to choose another store at which to shop. When my dentist sold his practice and retired, I chose to stay with his successor. When my primary care physician moved up near convenient care, I had the option of going to family medicine so I can walk to my doctor's office. When things changed, I had options. However, there are no options for me if the Office for the Aging is moved to Brown Road. There are no alternatives. I feel that it is important that the Office for the Aging stay downtown, close to the other services, service agencies such as Lifelong. I came here tonight to express my concerns. If I am thinking this way, I wonder how many other people are feeling and thinking the same. Please reconsider this matter for people who do not own a car or do not drive or people who are giving up the car and people who use wheelchairs, walkers, and people who's visually impaired. In addition to increased inconvenience, excuse me, it adds up to more transportation and time costs for people who may not be able to shoulder them. Please consider COFA to move to former carpet bazaar permanently. Thank you.
Thank you. Natasha Hall, then Eleanor May.
Did it occur to you that the Office for the Aging is called just that because its primary and only concern is to help seniors? The benefits are many. Heat, farmers market coupons, Medicare counseling, weatherization, home repairs, caregivers, and the list goes on. As you can gather, it is a most important organization. The office was asked to move, and a building, the former carpet bazaar, was found to everyone's satisfaction. Then, what happened? A few months ago, legislators disagreed with this choice and chose instead a place on Brown Road. I was pleased that enough people were upset and made themselves heard, so that has been canceled. Then there was no majority agreement on six other options presented, so it was finally thought that to move COFA to the library on a temporary basis. So what does it really mean? In a few years, when the library building is sold, the same confusion will result again, which frankly is not at all for the well-being of COFA. The best and the only solution is to leave the Justice Center where it is now, and then find a permanent place for them after the sale of the library. It is much fairer than to disrupt and displace COFR again. In other words, what is best for the Office for the Aging is best for senior Ithacans, and the best is to move it to the former carpet bazaar as originally planned. Thank you.
Thank you, Natasha. Eleanor May, then Pat Long.
My name is Eleanor May, and I'm a longtime resident of the town of Ithaca. I'm the past chairman of the COFA board. As long as I've been on the COFA board, and before I came, we've talked about moving. Lisa came to our meeting, reported on this and that, and then we rejoiced because we were going to move to Carpet Bazaar. Both Martha and Pat have recently come to our board and spoke about the budget and its constraints. I believe the Carpet Bazaar is the best location for us. Thousands of people are served by the Office for the Aging each year, and this downtown building would provide necessary access to our services. I appreciate the opportunity to come to speak to you. I'm not going to repeat what I had in my notes because everybody else has already said it, but I do wish that hope that you will consider and keep us in the Carpet Bazaar building. I feel like it is the most appropriate choice. Thank you.
Thank you, Eleanor. Pat Long.
I'm Pat Long, town of Ithaca. Thank you for the opportunity to address you in regard to where you're moving COFA. I am a little upset because as a longtime resident, the old county home sits as a disaster with doors open, falling down on Perry City Road. Well, let me see. There used to be a hospital up there, and that's gone. Then the health department, that's gone. And we have to move everything to the northeast, closer to Lansing. I think that Brown Road would have been a disaster to move COFA up there. But I do not like the idea of moving COFA into temporary quarters and spending a lot of money, taxpayers' money, federal, state money, to move it again. And I must admit that at my age, I'm surprised to find seniors younger than me who, for one reason or another, are not driving. They need access by gadabout, buses, whatever, and it's nice if they can come downtown and do more than one thing, shop, run errands, go to the senior center, and go into COFA for all the various reasons other speakers have mentioned. And I feel very strongly, I am shocked to hear that you're going to discard the old library. Couldn't we find a use for it? I mean, my goodness, money down the drain over and over. So I have a little different perspective on some of these things. But I do feel it's very important for a major part of your population to have access to the county office for aging. And let's face it, you guys are all county legislatures. You know what a big county this is and how far people have to drive. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat. Pat's the last person to have signed up. Is there anyone else who would like? Okay. Just give us your name and where you live. And, Kathy, I know you have a letter.
My name is Eugene Lovelace. I'm a citizen of the town of Enfield, and I'm also a member of COFA's advisory board. And I'm here, obviously, because where COFA moves is an issue tonight. I clearly think that to effectively carry out COFA's mandate, they have to be in some central and visible location. And I was very disturbed at the prospect that they might be moved to Brown Road. I think it would have been a serious mistake because it's physically a very short distance to Brown Road. It is psychologically another universe for a great many elders who just wouldn't find the place, wouldn't take the initiative to find the place and make use of the services that they need or deserve. I was, as other advisory board members, delighted early in the year to find that Carpet Bazaar building was actually being purchased. We were going to a home that was visible, central, had so much going for it. After last Thursday's Capital Planning Board meeting, I learned there was a possibility it would be the old library. My first thought was, well, hey, that's right next door to Lifelong. That's the major senior center downtown. That's great. And I got to thinking about the space, and the egress and access to that place is all down a path, a ramp, that under ideal conditions, many elderly people will have a hard time accommodating, and under slightly wet or icy or snowy conditions would be impossible. It's a very bad place to get in and out of for the elderly. For that reason alone, I think the Carpet Bazaar is clearly the best choice you have. And I strongly hope, respectfully hope, that you'll see to it to put COFA in the Carpet Bazaar. Thank you.
Thank you. Marie, and then Brian. Or Brian, and then Marie. Yeah.
No, Marie McRae. I do not live in Ellis Hollow, but I'd like to address the issue of completing Ellis Hollow Road. Nobody wants to hear me say this, but I kind of liked it when it was lumpy because it did keep the speed down. It's a beautiful road. The project has been well done, but I urge you to put forward the funds to complete the colored shoulders. Every time I come into town, I drive Ellis Hollow Road. I know how fast people go. My partner bikes on Ellis Hollow Road. I worry about his safety with the increased speed on the better surface. So I urge you to put those funds down and get those colored shoulders finished. Thank you.
Thanks, Marie. Brian?
I'm Brian Eden, Village of Cayuga Heights and Environmental Management Council Energy Committee. I was planning not to speak because of the length of this previous speakers, but I think it's important. We may be facing the challenge of the millennium, human-induced climate change. We have the responsibility, both individually and collectively as a county, to reduce our contributions to worldwide greenhouse gas emissions. I'm here to discuss Resolution K, authorizing MEGA to bid for gas and electricity for the county. In this regard, I made brief statements before the budget and PDEQ committees in the past month. My intent is to encourage broader discussion on the mix of fuel sources purchased for the county. The past year, I've discussed this with county staff and legislators to gain a better understanding of our current practice. Responses have ranged from, this is a very complex issue, to contact Gordon Boyd, the MEGA consultant, for explanations. I and the county need to become better informed consumers. Transparency. MEGA has been in existence for 14 years. It was started by Tompkins County. It has not yet produced an annual report, so we really don't understand fully the operations of MEGA. MEGA's agent, how much does he make? He's not paid by the county. He's not paid by MEGA. He gets a royalty fee from the selected bidder. So I'm not particularly fond of this arrangement. Bid specs are to be released to the ESCOs on 9/15. Unlikely sufficient time for the county committee to review it. Hard numbers and options are difficult to obtain. The projected $23,000 in annual savings for electricity, how is this calculated? So in the long term, we have a really robust local food production, marketing, and distribution system. Why can't we have a similar system for renewable energy? We need an increased focus on development of local renewable energy resources. We have ample wind, solar, and hydro potential on a commercial scale. Local generation and distribution will provide us with investment opportunities and generate a substantial multiplier impact on the local economy. In the short term, we should harmonize our comprehensive plan and greenhouse gas emission goals with our purchase sources of heat and power. Work with progressive ESCOs to include renewable energy resources in their basic portfolio. I'm not necessarily speaking in opposition to the resolution. However, we can no longer delegate the full responsibility for the decisions that are so important in this regard to MEGA.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? Kathy.
Thank you. As many of you know,
Julia Bentley McDonald has sent communications to many of the legislators regarding COFA. She was unable to attend the meeting tonight, and she asked me to read this statement for the record at the meeting tonight. To the Tompkins County Board of Legislators in the matter of COFA, and I'm reading for her. I am Julia Bentley McDonald of Newfield, New York. Having worked in human services in Tompkins County for over 30 years with a cross-section of children, families, and seniors, I believe it is time that COFA had a permanent home downtown. For too long, COFA has been relegated to the basement of the county courthouse. While I can appreciate the needs of various county agencies and their impact on the neighborhood, I believe we should now move COFA permanently to the Carpet Bazaar space. By moving COFA to the old library at this time would possibly mean either two or even three moves. One, to the old library. Two, out of the old library when it is to be demolished. And three, either back to a new county building or senior center if one is constructed on that site or to another site. With the baby boomers coming of age, COFA will soon need the space afforded at the Carpet Bazaar building. The measure of a society lies in how it treats its youngest and oldest members. We should revere and respect our seniors rather than treat them with indignity. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. All right. Thank you all. I don't think there are any municipal officials in the room to address us. All right. Legislators, public privilege. Anyone? Nathan?
Yes. I had the pleasure today of attending the first meeting of the healthcare subgroup for the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council. And we had as members a couple of Binghamton professors, the president of Lourdes Hospital, of Corning Hospital, of Arnett Health, of United Health, the president. And then me, and then the vice president, I think, from Broome Community College. So there was about 10 people all together in the room. And we started out with just a SWOT analysis, so it was a very preliminary meeting. We also asked for different data sets from the state so that we can help begin the conversation. But we're going to be meeting weekly for the next 4 weeks, and we hope to come out with at least 2 to 3 ideas of how we can use the healthcare industry to promote job growth in the Southern Tier. I know one of the benefits of the Southern Tier is that we have a lot of competition in the health market, actually. There's UHS and Arnett Health and Guthrie and Cayuga Med and all these other places that actually provide a very high level of service. And so, you know, for the vast majority of cases, 98% of the time or so, you can actually get those services here in the Southern Tier, which is great for patients. So it also makes us very attractive to the elderly population. So one of the things that we want to look at is senior homes and whatnot within the Southern Tier region. But of course, we battle with population stagnation or decline. We also have an aging workforce, especially in hospitals, that we have to deal with. And we have young people that don't stay, that get educated here, but they don't stay. And so that's some of the challenges and threats that we're going to have to deal with as well. And so I think it's going to be an interesting group. And it's one of, gosh, how many subcommittees, Martha?
Ten?
Oh, eight? Eight subcommittees? But it seems like, you know, the group's very dedicated. And so I'm excited about what will happen in the next 4 weeks.
Thank you, Nathan. Anyone else? Dooley.
In about a month, Ithaca College will have its 20th annual Founders Day concert in DeWitt Park. Specifically, it's on Sunday, September 18th at 2 p.m. This year, it will be the Ithaca College Wind Ensemble, and they will be focusing on a program saluting the Wild West, past and present. And people are invited to bring friends, family, bring a lawn chair or a blanket. Again, DeWitt Park on Sunday, September 18th. I try to go every year. It's always fun.
Thank you, Dooley. Brian and Frank.
Another bit of free advertisement. This weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday is the annual Old Home Days up in Groton. Everyone's invited to attend. It's usually filled with music and food and art displays and so forth. And it draws a big crowd, including the parade on Saturday. So If anyone doesn't have anything to do and would like to visit our little corner up in the northeast, please come on up.
Thank you, Brian. Frank.
Thank you, Martha. I have three announcements for you. The last Thursday, we had a meeting in Seneca Falls at the Empire Farm Days with regard to the Blue Ribbon Commission on Agriculture that I serve on at the governor's request. And we had quite an assembly of individuals from across the state. We have resolutions that we're preparing. This is the third installment on the importance of agriculture to the New York State economy, and most people are not aware that it is still the largest contributor to economic betterment in the state of New York. But we're highlighting employment opportunities. It goes well beyond the dairy industry. There's all kinds of new niches, including organic farming, woodlots, fish farming, and we want to make sure that the general public is aware of it. That report will be presented to NYSAC next month at the State Association meeting. We'll have another meeting in Albany during that same week. With that in mind, I've tried to reach Catherine Boers, who is the chairman of the panel that Martha serves on, one of the panels. Nathan is serving on the health panel, and I understand Ed Marks is serving on the one for agriculture. Catherine is chairing that panel, and it's important that we get the information that we just developed last week to her, so I want to try to pick you off, Ed, on that one. Good meeting, and of course, equine did come up. I won't go into that, but it's a major piece of the economy here locally. One item for your calendars, and if the proposed budget schedule survives, many of us will not be able to attend this, unfortunately. But on September 27th, all of you should have received in your mailboxes the Community Mental Health Services Board invitation for the dinner that night. And we're invited each year, and it's an opportunity for individuals in the community to be recognized by Carol Booth, the chairman of that board, plus Bob DeLuca, our commissioner of mental health. And that's coming up on the 27th of September. Last item I'd like to mention, and this sort of straddles my chairmanship of the Health Committee. Saturday, several hundred of us had an opportunity to attend an event down at the Yacht Club, and it was the annual Women's Swimming event. And my understanding is that there were over 300 women that jumped in the lake and swam the 1.2 miles, raising about $304,000. It was very well attended. The weather cooperated. The food was great. And there was a lot of enthusiasm. And I think we ought to recognize Kathy Herrera as one of our swimmers. Didn't mean to embarrass you.
But I understand that you had acquaintances and friends involved in the situation. There were 1,000 volunteers at this event, tremendous community event, and members of county staff involved as well.
It was really great. And one of the reasons it's of particular interest to me, not just because the event was so great, is I was chairman of the original board that formed HospiCare, and I was treasurer of that board. Myself and a couple of members of the health department, this is when the building was still standing, by the way, the old building was still standing, and to see it have come this far, and the money that was raised will go in to support the new, well, it's new to us, the facility up on East King Road. It's really a wonderful facility. It's done a lot of good in the community. So some of us have had a real hand and in helping establish some real meaningful businesses, if you want to call them that, but in support of healthcare in this community. And that's one of them. And I really want to thank, as chairman of the Health Committee and a member of the community and a member of that original board, I want to thank everyone that participated in that. It's Dale was very appreciative. I don't know who won the kayak, but it wasn't me. It was Nikki Roof.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, and I hope all of you think about all of you women think about participating next year. I understand if a particular mayoral candidate, whether or not she wins, one of the challenges is that she will compete next year. Is that right, Pam?
Sure.
It's not great.
I don't mean compete. I mean participate.
Okay, Carol, and then Peter.
Yeah, I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank the many, many, many people in this community, staff, volunteers, professionals, who have come out, some to speak tonight, and I want to be able to do this before they left because, some of our issues are going to take a long time into the evening. So if people leave, I just wanted them to know how much we appreciate the time that it takes to put in. We have committees. We have on the road use. We've had months of meetings and input that we've asked people to give. People have done so in writing. They've done so by email. They've done so in person. They've done so with links to videos. There are files that we keep on all of this. The road use files. It's too heavy to hold up now. The COFA issue, again, years of meetings. I also, some of you know, I have occasion to chair the Tompkins County TCOG Assessment and Land Valuation Committee. I asked people to come to a couple of meetings to discuss issues. They have spent months. We're now getting national inquiries about that, and they have hung in there, spending just countless hours, and our staff has spent similar countless hours responding. So we couldn't have a community like this without all of you. So thank you.
Peter, Mike, and then Leslin.
Thank you, Martha. I would like to report on a meeting that that Carol Jock and I organized a week ago, a public presentation of the budget. This was a meeting addressed to the people that live in the Pine Tree Road area. It was at Hannes Lane at the Lutheran Church, and I thought it was a very successful meeting. There were 9 people who came. There were 4 of us. It was Carol, me, Joe, and Marcia. And 9 real people came to listen. And I was thrilled. I thought there was a crowd there. As far as I was concerned, it was like being at Watkins Glen. You may think that's a little delusional, but the thing I had to compare it to was what happened a year ago when Carol and I did a presentation at the Town of Ithaca Town Hall, where the numbers were reversed. We had about 6 of us, and we had 4 people, one of whom was a child, and another of whom thought he was at the Floral Avenue Civic Association meeting. So this was a whole lot better. One thing I've learned, or I did learn after 50 years of teaching, is I'm pretty good at knowing when the students have lost interest and they're just sitting there waiting for it to end. Well, it didn't feel like that. I really honestly felt that the people there were interested, and we had some very vigorous discussions. The presentation, which I've now seen enough times to make me wonder if I waiting for page 27, which is the end. But I thought the people were just waiting for the next thing and really taking it all in. I thought it was very good. We did try to get from that group some reactions. We had spirited discussions on places where we might save money. A number of ideas that I heard before. One brand new one, which I'll pass along to Bill Sesney. Somebody wondered if we couldn't, in the wintertime, have overnight shifts on the snow plowing, where people had those shifts on a regular basis so that when the snow fell at night that we could avoid paying overtime to have it plowed. I have no idea, but I passed that on to him. I said I thought it was something worth thinking about. Another one that I think you'll find more interesting is that at one point where we talked about all of these numbers and the budgets that we were giving, to the cuts we were asking the department chairs to present, and the tax increases that would go along with those cuts, and it was, and the 2% tax cap. And I just said, well, how many of you people here think that we ought to exceed the tax cap? I said, you know, we can exceed it with 9 votes. I would like to stay within it, but what do you people think after going through what cuts might mean in a realistic way and what was responsible for them? And we had a range of people there, one of whom was a conservative, she labeled herself, woman, who said, I believe you have to cut the amount of money you spend. All of the people in that room, right, Carol? All of the people in that room raised their hands, some with enthusiasm, some reluctantly, but the 9 people raised their hands saying that they thought we probably had to exceed the tax cap. So that's the only information I have from residents, and I just pass it on.
Thank you, Peter. So 9 people in the town of Ithaca. Mike, and then last one.
City.
Another event that happened Saturday was the annual Farm City Day, sponsored by our own Agricultural and Farmland Protection Board and Cooperative Extension. It was held out in Freeville on the Jerry Dell Farm, which used to be the Marquis Farm, and the hosts were Vaughn and Susan Sherman and their family. There were a lot of people that came out for that. The weather was great for that event. One nice thing that happened was that farm is immediately adjacent to Cornell's Thompson Research Facility, which does research on vegetable growing. And the wagon rides, which they normally have, took a lot of people. They went for hours filled across the road into the fields at Cornell, where there, by the way, are over 5 miles of irrigation pipes just in that one farm, to see everything from broccoli and sorghum and potatoes and vegetables, where they're working on blight research and other production capabilities. It was very interesting, and that was unusual for that facility to be open up for public to look at. So that was a great thing that we had happen. And it was a promotion of agriculture in Tompkins County and the farms that we have and the folks that make them work. And I think we should be very proud of them. The other thing I just wanted to report on quickly is that tomorrow in Binghamton there is a hearing on it's by the New York State Legislative Task Force on Demographics and Redistricting. That is the group that's set up with legislators and other people to talk about how redistricting is going to be done in the state of New York. As you know, to date, we do not have an independent redistricting commission, as was proposed by several governors and as was pledged by a number and probably a majority of our state legislators. We seem to be going down a track toward business as usual. I will be going down tomorrow and giving testimony in which I will report about our efforts as for a independent redistricting commission for Tompkins County and our concerns about how Tompkins County has been sliced up in the past during the redistricting processes.
Thank you very much for taking time to do that, Mike. Appreciate that. Leslyn, and then Will.
Okay. Well, Kathy, that was a really nice deflection, and you thought you'd get away with it that easily? No. I do want to say big kudos to you for participating in women's swimming. You're very modest about it. You didn't say anything that you were. And, you know, as for myself and many others for whom Hospicare is real meaningful, we do appreciate your time getting out there and swimming. I'm not sure if you were there at 6:15 in the morning, but bless your heart if you were. I planned on being there at 6:15. I did. Didn't make it. But really, seriously, thank you for doing that. And Pam, next year, girl, you on. I'll be in the boat. I'll be the one in the boat cheering. I'll have pom-poms, me and Martha. She doesn't know it yet. We'll have pom-poms.
I can do that.
in the boat. So thank you very much. Just want to say very quick kudos to the young people of YES here in the city of Ithaca for the first Banana Festival. We went bananas on the commons. It was wonderful. But even aside from the, just having a festival, to know that we have young people in our community who are of the mindset that they want to do something meaningful, they want to get involved in community, they want to get involved in helping to bring revenues into our community, in people into our community, and promoting our community is commendable. And I do want them to know that we are very proud of them. And if they continue to do it, I'm sure this festival will grow by leaps and bounds. Just in the space of time I was there, talking to a few people, many of whom were from out of town, we're just thrilled to know that our youth had that vision and can pull it off, and something just wonderful. So congrats again to them. And on the budget, Peter, Kathy and I are going to have a party with a purpose on Thursday, so that we have people coming out as we talk similarly to, you know, Pat and Martha, Mike, and yourself and Carol about the county budget and where we are, where we're going, and hear what people's questions or priorities, you know, might be, see if they mesh with what we're thinking. So this Thursday the 18th from 7 to 8:30 at Cooperative Extension, Kathy, 5th Ward Representative, and myself, 2nd Ward, we're pretty much the flats of Ithaca, the city of Ithaca, will be hosting a budget informational meeting for the residents. Everyone is invited, of course. You don't have to live in the 2nd or 5th Ward to be there, so we can hear from folks what it is. I ran into someone who I gave a flyer to, and if it makes you feel any better, Peter, about, you know, what people have to say, the question they had was, let officials know how you would like the county to respond, was, you know, part of what we had in our flyer. And the person said, you mean the county has that much money that they want us to tell us how to spend it? And I said, yeah, come on down, because you might be able to tell us where to find it, the much money that we have. So please come on out, those of you who are watching, and to the meeting on Thursday. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Will, then Peter.
Thank you, Martha. And if for some reason you're not free to come to the meeting on Thursday, there are yet two more opportunities to do it. This is the night to promote our community budget meeting. And a huge thanks out to Joe and Marcia for helping get these together. But on the last day of this month, which is Wednesday the 31st, there will be a meeting at Litterman Creek, which is on West Hill, starting at 7. And the following night, September 1st, will be a meeting on South Hill at a church on Grandview Avenue. I'm working with Pam on two of those. And Frank, I guess you're going to be working on the one on South Hill, right? So please do come. It's a great opportunity. And once again, thanks to Joe for putting together the presentation and being willing to do this. I also want to give thanks to all the people who came out tonight and spoke to us on a variety of subjects. You know, once again, I'm endlessly impressed by the intelligence and thoughtfulness of our community. Several people talked about the bad idea of moving COFA to the old library. And I have to take a little personal responsibility for it. I think I was one of those people that sort of got that idea in motion, based because I desperately want to keep, I think it's incredibly important to keep COFA downtown. Yeah. Almost any place downtown is, to my mind, better than out of town. And about a year ago, when we were doing tours of various agencies, I had occasion on a nice winter day to go visit and remember being surprised at how light and airy and surprisingly nice that facility was then. But I thought, in fairness, I should go back and give it another look. And the other day, when it was raining, as it is wont to do here in Ithaca, I went. And it was quite a different environment and not you know, the memory can be a little tricky. I was made aware of numerous moisture issues within the building, and specifically there's an attached garage, and it was literally raining inside that garage. And Mrs. Long was, I think she's left, but she was talking about, you know, could that building be saved or whatever. I am not, I know we have made a decision to get out of that, but I am not 100% sure that it's a worthless building. But it will soon be if we don't do some at least stabilizing work. And I guess I encourage us to do that. I became aware that A was not an appropriate site for the access issues that Mr. Lovelace cited. But I'm not even sure it's a terribly good site. I think it's not a good site for the community justice. I think we really need to move forward and move that out and put that building to some other use. But thank you, Martha.
Thank you, Will. Briefly, Peter, something new?
Very briefly, I forgot to say that there will be yet another opportunity for people that live near Community Corners to come to a meeting a week from tomorrow on the 24th. Where Dooley and I will host a similar discussion at the Cayuga Heights Fire Department at 7 o'clock.
Thank you. Marcia, are all these dates on the website, the county website?
They are.
For the public meetings or the budget meetings are all on the county website, and people can go there and obviously go to any meeting. You don't have to go to the one where your district is. Anyone else? Thank you. For my report, I'll try to be brief, but a couple things of importance. Nathan mentioned the Economic Development Council. Last week was the first meeting, and tomorrow is the second meeting of the full council. So I went down there along with Carolyn Peterson and Stephen Johnson from Cornell, David Scorton and Catherine Bohr, the other members of the council, as well as Michael Stamm. We heard from Lieutenant Governor Duffy, and then we're part of a press conference, and we just were the backdrop for his press conference at the end. I hope that the press will be included in the rest of the meetings. So far, they have not been, including they were not included in the energy work group meeting that I was part of yesterday. So I signed up. I volunteered to join the energy work group, one of eight. There are Tompkins County members on all of the work groups, and in some cases more than one member. So Bob Howarth from Cornell is the other member of the energy group with me from Tompkins County, and it is a lively group. We spent easily 75% of the time talking about Marcellus Shale, and I will say, unfortunately, overshadowed all the incredible things that are happening in the Southern Tier with research and development of other kinds of energy. Solar, we heard just a little bit about solar cell development, lithium battery development, biofuels, and conservation. And I hope that we can steer the conversation in that direction in a significant way. So we are also going to be meeting once a week and get to really know the road down to Binghamton. There will be at least a couple of meetings of the full council at Cornell during September. I'm not sure which of the September meetings are going to be at Cornell, but I'll let people know. I also was part of last Thursday to Troy for the second meeting of the Medicaid redesign work group. That's part of the Governor's Medicaid Task Force, Medicaid Redesign Task Force. And this, I reported on our first meeting before. At the meeting last week, we spent most of the time talking actually about the health insurance exchange that New York will be setting up as part of the Federal Affordable Care Act. The governor has put forth a program bill, and the Assembly has passed it, but the Senate has not passed the legislation that would actually set up the exchange. It's very important that they pass that legislation as soon as possible, because if we do pass it in time for the exchange to be implemented, the feds will pay 100% of the cost to do that. But it's important that the state Senate pass it this fall. So I'll be communicating to Senator Seward because that's it's actually he's a sponsor of the bill, but it's got to get done. The issue with Medicaid and the exchange is very significant because the idea is that there will be a seamless, kind of no wrong door methodology place for people to go for their health insurance. And once you speak to somebody, and the no wrong door means by phone or in person or on the internet, various or by mail that you can apply, and then you will be sort of judged, you know, are you going to be getting a subsidy based on income? Are you going to be eligible for Medicaid? Or, you know, if your income is too high, you won't get have any subsidy. So it's all going to be part of one system. It will be, it's part of our, a big part of our group's job to figure out what we recommend as far as what functions will be done locally and what functions make sense to be done regionally or even on a statewide basis. So we got into the weeds, and I expect we're going to be pretty far into the weeds at the next meeting as well to really sort through the details of how this will work. It's, you know, I'm learning a lot. There's some great people on the task force. And one of the things that we did resolve, did decide, was that we will be passing, writing and passing a resolution on the financing of Medicaid. That is, that we'll be recommending that formally that the state begin a takeover of the program cost of Medicaid. So I expect to be working on that language in the next couple of weeks. That's my report. If there are any questions, Jim?
Yes, one question. At the beginning of your report, you were talking about a meeting you were attending, and did I hear you say that the media is not allowed, or they have not, or they have chosen not to show up?
The first meeting, and this was statewide, of all of the economic development councils, the media was not permitted to attend. In fact, a member of the press tried to come into our energy work group yesterday and was escorted out.
I just wanted to make clear that that's what I heard. Thank you.
Yes, that's what you heard. Nathan, Leslin, and Frank?
Right, but there's public, there's going to be opportunities. There's going to be public meetings. That's what we're talking
about. There will be public meetings.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, because what happened is that there was so much concern about the lack of transparency, I guess, in that process. So today, when we talked about it, they said they will be including a series of public meetings so that people can provide input to. And also, they could share things.
And I think tomorrow's meeting of the council, the media will be allowed in for part of it. I'm not sure which part of it.
Yeah.
Leslin?
Thank you, Nathan. I was getting a little worried because I actually was going to ask if these meetings are open because some of us, you know, expressed interest when you sent the email to Mr. McLaughlin serving on those committees, and it was too late, couldn't get on, or I don't know what the reasoning was. And so I would be interested, even though I'm not a member of the committee, an appointed member, to be able to sit in on some of those meetings. So I'm worried. So should I be asking him, or is it that those of you who are sitting on them, they are going to be open? So when your next meeting is, if I choose to come and sit in? And
I don't think those will be open. I think they're going to have specific public meetings available. Like
I see.
Yeah, where they're going to share information and have public comments.
That's a little different.
Which they didn't originally have scheduled.
Thank you.
As is my understanding. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
But as far as sitting in, I actually asked yesterday when the press, when a media person was shuffled out, I said, aren't we subject to the open meetings law?
Yeah.
And was told, no, because it's an advisory board.
That's right.
And I said, and the membership of the media, of the group is not allowed to be shared? And he said, no. So I just shut up at that point. But Carolyn Peterson raised it at the last meeting, and I expect it'll be a conversation point tomorrow, and I have to say that sounds a lot like the Supreme Court case that Dick Cheney won. So having to do with the advisory board on energy policy back in 2003, I don't really want to participate in that kind of thing, but I'm going to ask about it. Frank?
Thanks, Martha, and thanks for bringing that up. I don't want to, and I'm concerned, we don't want to make this a political discussion, but I want to make sure I understand the responsibility of the various committees. Is there some place that we can get a charge to those committees that we can at least review that? I want to piggyback on something that Lesson asked. Secondly, will we be permitted to communicate directly with the chairman or chairperson of the committee so that we can bring forth ideas? And thirdly, the individuals that have been appointed, with all due respect to Ed and yourself and Nathan, are you speaking on behalf of the county, or are you speaking on behalf of your position? Are you speaking on behalf of the fact that, in Ed's case, he's a planner? Because I would want to make sure that whomever, if it is on behalf of the county, that we as a board have weighed in on giving direction as to what that responsibility might be. If everything is so closed, how do we find out about that?
I see we've gotten Liz's attention here. Nathan, do you want to respond?
Based off of the information that I received, they actually selected me for because of my affiliation with my work, not because I'm a county legislator. So all my correspondence that they have to other members doesn't mention my county legislature side of things. And I think the reason why is that the discussions are, it's a very specific topic. It's healthcare subgroup, but it's specifically on the health industry. And so, even though I've brought in questions about populations and the elderly, et cetera, it seems like the committee's focused on, at least the healthcare subgroup's focused on hospitals and is focused on technology transfer and collaboration with universities. And that's it.
That's pretty, but do you find, I realize you've only had one several hour meeting,
yeah,
Nathan,
yeah.
But in your particular case, that's a pretty narrow focus when they consider that the individuals that have been selected are representing specific entities in their own industry. It may not be generous. It may not address the entire need of our region or even our county. And that's where I'm concerned. And I don't mean that as a detriment to the work you're doing. It's just an observation. That's why I asked Martha, yeah. Are we allowed to weigh in on any of this?
The work groups, the eight work groups, will be making proposals to the council, which then will sort through and prioritize in a manner. I'm not sure how that'll happen. Prioritize and develop a master plan that we're proposing. If I sound skeptical, it's because the schedule is unbelievable.
It's
so fast. I'm skeptical, but I'm obviously energetically participating. Nothing's going to be sent to the state before there are public hearings. But I wish there would be more public process, or at least observation possible during the development of these ideas. So I'm going to wait and see what happens. I will tell you that locally, the agriculture group, Ed Marks and Catherine Bohr are local, and Marvin Pitts is a Cornell, and Lee Talega is also from Cornell. The energy group, which is listed as natural gas, wind, solar, and biomass, I'm on that, and locally Bob Howarth, and those are the only two local. And the healthcare group, Nathan, I think you're the only person from Tompkins County. Infrastructure, which is information technology, water, sewer, roads, rail, etc. Savanti Myrick and Chuck Bartosz is on that. They are on that. And I'll tell you, all of these groups actually will tell you seem quite diverse in terms of geographic and a mix of kinds of fields people represent. So I was pleased with our group, at least. The Technology Transfer and Development Group is Michael Stamm is on it, and Alan Powell and Laura Sima from CTEC at Cornell. The tourism group, Fred Bond is on it locally. I'm listing these so that if you have interest in a particular group, you should talk to those folks. Should have said that at the beginning. Community or downtown revitalization and community development, Carolyn Peterson and Gary Ferguson are on it. And business development and entrepreneurship, Julia Maddock is on it. So those are folks who you can talk to easily and directly to if you have ideas or concerns or whatever about those particular areas. So I hope that helps. I'm going to try to do what we can to get this as open as possible.
Martha, can you say what the timetable is again? If you know it.
We're going to meet four times in the next 4 weeks, the work groups. The council itself is going to meet almost that often.
Yeah.
I think we have something like the middle of September, the work
Martha,
groups are supposed to
dates.
Have.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so we're going to be, at least my subgroup, and I think most of the subgroups are following the same schedule. We have weekly meetings for the next 4 weeks. We have to submit 2 to 3, main ideas by September 15th. There's going to be some sort of decision on those main ideas by like September 28th, and then they're going to work on a plan to submit to the governor by November. And then after that, I forget what the timeline is after that, but then there's going to be like, four plans out of the 10 plans that are going to be selected to receive funding from the governor.
Now, they'll all receive funding, but four will get a lot of money,
the other six
will get a little money.
Right.
Carol, Kathy, and then Jim.
Yeah, you covered some of what I was going to do, which was who else I knew from Ithaca who was on this. I share Frank and others' sentiment that who got appointed to this and what concerns they represent is very important. Also, I share Frank's concern, other than the tone of voice you used when you used the word planner. I'd like to know if the question that I've been asking has gotten answered. This whole pot of money that these councils are designed to address is being announced as a $1 billion pot. It is replacing dozens of programs, former programs, in each of these separate areas. Has anybody added up how much the former pot was and how much of a reduction there has been, if any, in what the totality of the pot now is that different regions and different activities that each used to have their own pots within our regions will all be fighting
over, I think it is not replacing, it is actually an aggregation of program dollars in all these other areas and housing and energy and other things. And they're sort of adding them all up and saying we have $1 billion, and there will be a consolidated application form where every project will go through this one process. I think there are things about it that are really going to be a big plus, because it will be simpler for organizations to apply. So, I mean, I don't want to put the whole thing down. I'm nervous about the timeline, but we have to compete.
Are we taking Andrew Cuomo's word for it that we're adding it up and it was $1 billion before, or do we know whether it was $2 billion before that was available? It's a question I'm asking. I don't expect you to have the answer now, but I'm curious if that answer comes up.
Kathy and Jim?
Well, thank you. At your urging, I also expressed interest in membership, and the email I got back said in part, you'll be pleased to know that Tompkins County is well represented. The question that I have is whether you know whether and how much labor is represented in this group, because I thought there were at least three and possibly four of those groups in which I thought labor would have an interest, and I would hope there would be some representation. And I guess since some of the membership is kind of secret, maybe you don't know that, but I'd love to find out.
Well, on the energy group, and I think he's the same individual as on the council as a whole, is Ernie Hartman from IBEW Local 139. And I can share this with you later and go through the rest of it if you want.
Well, I'm happy to hear about that, because IBEW does have a couple of innovative wind power and solar power programs, but there's other interests that Labor have, downtown revitalization and others. So I'd hope that it would be spread out and not just my union gets all the representation. Though I'm happy that Tompkins County and the IBEW are represented.
Okay, good, thanks. And then, Jim?
May I suggest that the discussion has taken place, members, timelines, all that, be put in an email and sent out to the whole legislature at your earliest convenience.
Okay, they're developing a website as well, so that's not up yet.
Thank you.
As far as I know, I'll send out everything I can. All right, so that's my report. Didn't mean to open a can of worms, but there you go. So, Joe, what? You think I did? Okay.
No, it's usually what I do, though.
All right, county administrator.
Yeah, in the interest of time, I'll at least talk fast and get through a very short list of things for tonight. First of all, you know, I take great pride in my PowerPoints. I feel pretty cool with all those graphics and everything I put up. And then tonight I see a YouTube presentation, and I'm feeling very 20th century tonight. A relic. Kind of in that spirit of technology, I do want to let you know the online personnel, the employment application system, is just about good to go. Looks like next week, if you want to apply for a public civil service job in Tompkins County, you're going to be able to do it online through a new system that our personnel department has developed as the consequence of one of our smart work projects. You're going to like it, and the people that are looking for work in the public sector are going to like it as well. They're going to be able to track. They're going to be able to enter their application online, track their progress, check exam scores, do things that used to require a trip or a phone call in. And if you don't have access to a computer, we have computers here where you can do that same kind of work, and you can do it through the libraries as well. As employers will have benefits, too. They'll be able to look at things online that used to require, again, coming down to talk to personnel, mail, email, and telephone calls. So we should be really pleased about what's happened there. I want to give a little credit. Steve Estes has done a really nice job in managing this project with help from all of the personnel department staff. And, again, this is a big step forward. You're going to like it when you see it next week. I don't know if I can say the same thing about liking what you see. That my next topic is the 2012 budget. Believe it or not, at your next meeting, I will be bringing with me the 2012 recommended budget. We are deep into the process right now. I think I've said to several committees now that, you know, I'm daring to be a little bit optimistic. The things that often will wiggle around during this part of the budget process seem to be moving in a positive direction for us. We heard about pensions a week ago, where the estimate given to us last year by the comptroller turned out to be on the high side. Not because the pension rates are down, but because the comptroller was assuming normality in terms of wage hikes and rosters. And all of you know it hasn't been normal. Our wages haven't risen. Our personnel roster has gone down. So we're seeing some savings there that should carry into next year. I don't want to suggest that we're out of the woods or that we don't have problems we have to deal with, but I will tell you that things that can move around during the course of the budget process seem to be moving in our direction right now. Hopefully I won't have to change that overview when I come to you in 3 weeks with the budget. A couple of other quick things I'd like to say. First of all, with respect to the people who are here for COFA, some of you suggested that the legislature had endorsed or approved or passed on the idea of a move to Brown Road. In fact, that was my recommendation to the legislature in a committee meeting, and that is one of many options that's still under review, so there hasn't been any kind of a legislative action to endorse that or anything else. It was my recommendation to this group, and it's, again, among the options being considered tonight. Last thing I'd like to say, you have a very long and consequential agenda tonight. This is the product of weeks and months of work on some critical issues. I really do appreciate the diligence the legislature has shown, especially the committee chairs, in getting things to this point. We've had some lively debates, some opinions very strongly held, but tonight is really a reflection of a lot of hard work with these items on your agenda, and I really do appreciate what the legislature has done to bring these issues to this point. And that's my report.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions? appreciate that. I forgot to mention as part of my report, I'm appointing Jean McFeeters to the Workforce Investment Board for a term expiring June 30, 2014. Sorry, I forgot that. County Attorney Jonathan Wood?
No report.
All right, David. Finance Director David Squires?
No report.
All right, thank you. Resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Anything? Okay. All right, then I will read through the consent agenda, and if there's anything to be pulled off, please say so, and we'll come back to it later. Resolution A, approval of amended bylaws of the Tompkins County Office of the Aging Advisory Committee, Office for the Aging Advisory Committee. Resolution B, authorizing supplemental consultant agreement number one with CNS Companies Incorporated for design and administrative services in connection with terminal ramp rehabilitation at Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution C, authorizing supplemental consultant agreement number two with CNS Companies Incorporated for design and administrative services in connection with ARFF CFR building expansion to accommodate an operations office, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution D, authorization to execute supplemental agreement with Fisher Associates for design and right-of-way services, Hanshaw Road construction project. Resolution E, authorization to execute a supplemental agreement with Barton and LeJudis PC for construction, inspection, and support services, Newfield Depot Road bridge replacement project. And Resolution F, budget adjustment, Highway Division. Resolution G, authorizing 2011 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grants for job access and new freedom programs. Resolution H, authorizing bid for MV1 wheelchair accessible taxi from MV Sales and Leasing Incorporated, New Freedom Grant, New York 90X608. Authorizing Resolution I, authorizing New York State Department of Transportation Mass Transportation Capital Project Supplemental Agreement Number 3 for 2011, TCAT and Tompkins County. Resolution J, authorizing an aquifer study agreement for additional work on aquifers in the town of Danby. Resolution K, Resolution L, designation of Tourism Promotion Agency for State 2011-12. And Resolution M, authorizing 2011 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant applications for TCAT and Tompkins County. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? I see Peter moves and Leslie seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That is unanimous. All right. As I had mentioned before, we would do some shuffling. So I'd like to ask Chair of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee Carol Chalk, if you could forego your report for now and just go to the resolutions.
Yes, and this is a resolution N, and I'd like to point your attention to a revised version N that was handed out tonight with your packets. You should all have it. It was pointed out to me that there was a discrepancy between what was in the memo in our packet and some of the numbers and the resolution itself. I ask your forbearance to let me substitute this one and offer this one on the, not substitute, offer this one on the floor, especially since it is a lower number we're being asked to approve. This is resolution number N revised. Amendment of Resolution Number 107 of 2010, authorization to fund anticipated changes in work budget adjustment from Highway Fund balance, CR-110, Ellis Hollow Road reconstruction, Town of Dryden, and I so move.
And seconded by Dooley. And Carol, so is the only difference the number?
There, yes, the number in that we're being asked to approve as transfer of funds from Highway Fund balance to the Ellis Hollow Road reconstruction project is $93,000. That was down from what came out in your packet at $136,000. It was just an adjustment by our staff. There are some adjustments up above, again, in the numbers to make the to make sure that they match. And I could tell you...
put it on. But from your version before, you can put that full label.
So everybody has the changes, right?
Yeah, changes are in that one, two, third, whereas that number has been adjusted. They change order allowance on line 13 of the one that was in our packets. Whereas estimated value of change project work is now identifiable and is expected to exceed the previously authorized change order allowance by approximately, that now will read $76,000.
And change, right? Okay.
And and then in the final resolved, the amount again is adjusted. That's only 14.75% over the original contract value, not 17.5%. And that's a total contract price not to exceed $1,843,000.
Okay. Everybody got that.
All right. So, and can I say a word or two about it? I hope people that will support this. It's been part of the facilities and infrastructure communication plan. There are all kinds of reasons that I could talk about that have to do with shoulders and highways and speed, and people have made those arguments. As chair of F&I, we've really been trying to address communication with the public and making sure that how we represent the projects that we're doing to the public are what we actually do. And there's been years of conflict and mistrust on other projects that we've done, and we've been in court, and this is one where we worked with residents and we came to something, and they all seem to be supporting it. And so I do think that just changing it at this point not only might end up more expensive in the long run on this particular project, but will contribute to the image for future projects when we come to people and say, here's what we're going to do, how do residents trust our word for the future. So on that basis alone, I ask you to support it. Thanks.
All right, a lot of people. I think I saw, did you have your hand up, Frank?
Yes.
Okay, let me see. Wait, Frank, Jim, Mike, Pat, Peter. Go ahead, Frank.
Okay. Martha, I have a couple of questions for Carol. First, just a general one. On the reverse of the original resolution that was sent to us, packet page 26, it breaks down. Bill Sesney wrote us a memo, or wrote you a memo, regarding a breakdown of the numbers. Will any of those numbers now change since the 100 odd thousand, the 120, has now become 76?
Staff can correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, it is that we just changed the resolution. I introduced a resolution that made sure to agree with the numbers that are in this memo.
Okay, so the 76, 163, 64, that's item C, the extra authorization in that box, that's the number that we're representing here. Okay, can you speak a little bit about the shoulders, which seems to have been the subject of a gazillion emails here in the last couple of days? Are the shoulders currently, let me ask the questions, are the shoulders on Ellis Howell Road currently paved? Can you state the distance that the colored shoulders, the proposed colored shoulders, would carry as compared to the total distance on the Ellis Hollow Road? Take those two.
I should ask staff.
Joe,
the exact numbers here.
I think
here.
John and Bill are both here. They can speak to it. With respect to the paving, the shoulders, I believe the paving has been completed. Now it would be a matter of putting the surface treatment on those shoulders to color those shoulders. So that can happen after those shoulders are done. With respect to the distance of the colored shoulders, is the question whether the colored shoulders run the entire span of the road improvements?
Ellis Hollow, what did we pave on Ellis Hollow Road, and how much of that distance will be colored, if you will?
John, you want to come to the microphone here?
For instance, if we did 3 miles of Ellis Hollow Road, will the proposed colored shoulders cover the whole 3 miles on both sides, or just a proportion of that? Excuse me.
The portion that we paved, the project, was 1.4 miles long. So the road itself is longer than that. So the shoulders that have been paved as part of the project is 1.4 miles. The capital project calls for the paving of the rest of the shoulders through to the Town of Ithaca line in the future.
And how long is that section? Do you know?
It's comparable. It's probably in the 1.3, something like that range.
So the colored shoulders will not run the entire length of the newly paved Ellis Hollow Road?
It will run the entire length of the newly paved portion of Ellis Hollow Road, but it will not run the entire length of Ellis Hollow Road, if that's what you're asking.
Are we going to put a white stripe along the shoulder, the demarcation stripe, to alert us to where the shoulder begins, and so that in the fog we can find the width of the road?
Yes, that line is there already.
Thanks.
So can I just clarify, since the question was asked of me, there's been a lot of discussion about what coloring means, and a question about the maintenance for such coloring. Is this coloring that sits on top of the road and needs to be repainted, the shoulder, and needs to be repainted, or is it color that is worked into the pavement and is just there?
I think this will come up. If you can just describe the treatment.
The treatment that has been proposed by our contractor, actually, that we're working with to come up with what we want to do there, is a slurry seal. It's not a paint. It's a polymer cement slurry seal versus an asphalt slurry seal. And so it is not a paint, but it is not intrinsically in the asphalt either.
And what about maintenance? Was that?
The contractor would be guaranteeing the treatment for 5 years. They expect it to last 10. And maintenance is possible. We would need to get the base materials to do that, and those are available in small quantities if we need to do maintenance.
But within the 5 years, they would maintain? They would fix it? Is that what the guarantee means?
I would say so.
Okay.
Or at least they would pay for the maintenance.
Okay. Jim and Mike, Pat and Peter.
The question I had was sort of answered already, but you're talking about a slurry surfacing of the blacktop. The blacktop is not itself changed color in this, only what's on top of it. In the original plan, were you going to have the asphalt as a different color than the roadway?
Yes, we were.
Okay. What was the price of that?
That was $120,000.
Okay, so this is like, if I can say, the fallback position to keep the side of the road, make the side of the road different than the roadway.
I wouldn't call it a fallback position.
Well, call it whatever you want. It's a different than soaking the asphalt with color you're painting on top of the asphalt. With
you could say that.
Okay, thank you.
Mike?
John, I'm still confused about the dollars here. So the original project and the resolution we looked at in the F&I committee was $120,000 for this process, and that included the – I remember when they brought in the little aggregate colored stones, we looked at them at a committee meeting at one point, and they were different ones came from different areas in order to get them. That may have been a while ago, but I remember that. So now how did we make this decision all of a sudden now to go from that kind of an aggregate in the asphalt for $120,000 to the slurry for $76,000? And is that $76,000 the actual cost of the slurry installation?
The slurry cost is $100,000. And the decision was made because we felt that the seams that would result along the edges of the driving lanes if we used the intrinsically colored asphalt material would be a negative thing for the longevity of the road. And rather than have to maintain those seams, we thought that we would want instead to pave all the way across from the center of the road to the outside of the road. And then we would be able to apply this slurry, polymer slurry, to color the shoulder. Instead, we would get the benefit of not having that seam to maintain, and we'd also be saving a little money.
Okay, thank you. I've got a problem with this resolution, adding $76,000 of local cost for this project. When it was within the budget, I didn't have any difficulty with the treatment to the shoulders as originally proposed. Now we're talking about adding, taking money out of our reserve and putting it into something that probably we don't have to have out there. None of our other roads right now have anything like that. I guess, what was it, Warren Road is gone. I don't know for sure whether this will slow down traffic or not. I don't think anyone is totally sure about that. What I'm most concerned about is what's going to happen to us financially this year. Can we afford to have these projects business as usual? Shouldn't we be back to basics? Shouldn't we be thinking about what's going to happen if we have a lot of people coming in here not wanting programs cut, and the knives are sharpened for the highway budget, for the asphalt, how much we're going to be able to pave? I've got roads in my district right now. Fall Creek Road from Freeville to near McLean is in terrible shape, and apparently it doesn't even have, not even on the boards yet to be repaired. So I think we should be pinching pennies. I'm sorry.
Pat.
Well, some of the things that I wanted to know have already been spoken to. And I guess as I look at this little table on the memorandum, it's not, some of them are apparent why the cost has changed. If the price has gone up on something like the asphalt, that's pretty self-explanatory. But with some of these, I don't understand why, and even the change you're talking about with the shoulders, why are these decisions not made in the planning stage for a project like this so that more accurate figures can be developed? I mean, this project already has gone over the original projection by 10%. So we've already reached the 10% that was authorized to start with. So and what we're really being asked for is to go over that now with this change. So I guess I'm a bit skeptical as to why we're so far off what we originally thought the project was going to be, with the exception of those things where the costs have gone up. And I don't understand why even a 10% increase, it seems to me that should be adequate to cover things that were unable to be anticipated when the planning took place.
John? Bill? Joe? Anyone?
Okay. I don't know if you want me to run through all these items. I doubt you do. But a lot of the things had to do with the trying to confine the road work to the existing right-of-way. For example, the excavation and backfill items, because of the trying to confine the work and doing additional work for the storm sewer installation. The estimate that the engineer prepared was not accurate. And the extra pavement TNL that also had to do with the process that we did. It's a relatively rare process in the reconstruction world, I'd say. We do it a lot in Tompkins County as a reclamation, but because of you're sort of locked in with the grades of the road when you reclaim it versus reconstruct it, versus digging everything out and bringing new in, the need to build up in ways that you might not. It's hard to explain, I guess. But
may I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
Then I still don't understand why at least some of these things wouldn't have been anticipated in the planning of the project. Do we do this engineering work ourselves, or do we contract for this? Or?
This was contracted.
Well, do we have any provision in our contract if there is an overage of an amount like this that causes the cost to go up?
The contract was based on just unit prices. Quantities were estimated for the sake of the bid, but the quantities were adjusted in construction for what was actually encountered. And that's typical of large highway projects, and that's we encountered several changes.
If I can try, John, you've got on the table two items that are big numbers that essentially relate to the delay taking two seasons. You've got asphalt price escalation at $50,000 and work taking two seasons. Other stuff, $41,700, that had to be done and undone because you had to set it up a second time. So, I mean, obviously the price escalated from last summer to this summer. I mean, so both of those items had to do with the delay, right? And that's 91 right there. I mean, is that wasn't expected at the beginning, obviously.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. I guess I have to say that my bottom line is pretty much as Mike's, that this is the kind of thing that we have a budget gap this year that's in the millions, and we may not know exactly what it is, but we know that we're talking millions of dollars, not hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I think that this is the time when we have to question these kinds of expenditures.
Joe?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right to question these kinds of expenditures, and this project has run over. And I think Martha has hit the nail on the head with respect to one of the driving things that can't be anticipated. I mean, it was carried over into a second year. A lot of that carryover was weather-related. We had an awful fall last year, so it was carried over into this year. So to be able to make that street passable during that interim period, we had to spend some money to make it passable. And then the inflationary effect of asphalt prices and remobilization affected the numbers. So, again, you all know that I'm as frugal as the rest of you. I think as you look through each of these items, there are reasons why this went over. One of them wasn't the cost of the shoulders, and I think it's important to emphasize that. In fact, the cost of the shoulders has actually come down a bit. If I can just stay on the floor for a second. With respect to the shoulders, it was bid as an ad alternate. So at the very beginning of the process, we said to the contracting community, what would it be to add this to the base project? And we sought their bids. And we got bids. And at that point in the project, that's when you decide whether to make this an optional item or not. We chose to include it in the base. It became a part of the project. And that's where we get into the issue that has been raised earlier about what has been conveyed to the neighborhood about this project. And I think it's really important to keep that in mind, that our comments to the neighborhood, including comments on our own webpage, have said we will do the colored shoulders. It's a calming effect. It's a mitigating effect. It's something that we will include. So in terms of what the neighborhood is expecting from us, that's clearly an expectation. I say that because there will be a next project. And in the next project, we will also talk to neighbors about what we would propose to do to mitigate the effect of the project. And I'm concerned about if we decide to not do this now, it may be an issue as we try to deal with neighborhoods in the future. So I would just add that, and I know it's been said before, but I'd add that to the considerations tonight.
Bill, did you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to mention.
You should go to the mic then. Shorter than yes or longer than yes or no. We need you on the mic. Come up with John.
One of the things that's reflected in these additional costs is the fact that in the last year, oil prices have gone up. Okay, it not only affects the asphalt material, but all of the other things that we do, the additional gravel that we use, everything that we use material-wise is driven by oil. And we all know that the prices of oil has not gone down in the last year. Any questions?
All right. Thank you, Bill. You might want to hang out there. I've got Peter, then Kathy, Brian, and Leslin.
Yeah, I'd like to think I can compete for Penny Pincher of the Year with either Mike or Joe. I agree with that. I'm conflicted in this particular situation. But one thing I'd like to know, I'm not really familiar with the Ellis Hollow Road situation. Have we, in fact, widened the visible road, namely driving lanes plus shoulders, or is it on the original footprint of driving lanes plus shoulders?
The driving lanes are 10 feet and the shoulders are 5. Both sides of the road, it's a total of 30 feet of pavement. I believe that there was less shoulders on the original Ellis Hollow Road.
And I also gather that the thing that we repaved was in bad condition.
Yes.
The road that we rebuilt was in bad condition, right?
Not only was it in bad condition, it had deplorable drainage. We did upgrade the drainage to be able to handle it. We were having washouts out there because of the poor drainage conditions.
Right. It wasn't that I was interested in. I was interested in it visually. I mean, compared to Hanshaw Road, with which I'm much more familiar, it's clear to me that Hanshaw Road will look like a superhighway compared to what it is now after we build it. It will be very much wider and very much smoother. And is that, can you say the same thing about Ellis Hollow Road?
Yes, it does. It does have wider shoulders for safety purposes. It gives you some sort of a place to pull off if you have problem with your automobile.
Okay. Bill, the previous pavement of the lanes was 10 or 11 feet. Was it, I can't remember, 10 or 11?
It was
of the lanes.
It varied between 10 and 11.
And the shoulders, the only pavement was like a little bit that went past the line, right? It was
very
maybe
little.
6 inches, really no pavement.
Okay, well, it sounds sort of like Hanshaw Road. So having said that, I've gotten a lot of letters from people, emails from people saying we really have to do this thing because they're afraid that the traffic is going to go faster on that road. And I frankly think they're right. I think that when you get a nicer looking road, you tend to drive faster. And I think that is not an exaggeration. I've heard people say it's exaggerated, but I don't believe it's exaggerated. As a driver and as an observer, I don't think it's exaggerated. And it's clear to me that we did make a promise. It's not an enforceable promise. We can't make enforceable promises to neighbors, but we did lead people to believe that we understood that problem and that we were going to deal with it. And I think that's an obligation that we have. They can't take us to court, but I think it's an ethical obligation that we have to do this. On the other hand, I understand it's a lot of money. And so, you know, I'd be inclined to say, okay, it's a lot of money. We have to spend it. By the way, all the discussion of why is it overrun, I have no interest in that whatsoever. I've had enough experience with construction projects to know that things happen and there's things you can't do anything about and that they affect the prices. It's not something where you can make really precise estimates because you never quite know what you're going to run into and how long it's going to take. But the thing that bothers me is it really going to calm the traffic? Will it have the effect that they're looking for? They're not looking for nice colored shoulders. They're looking for traffic calming. And I did send an email to John and I think to John, I'm not sure, and also to Fernando and maybe to Bill, I can't remember, asking was there any, what does the research say about the traffic calming capabilities of colored shoulders? And I must say, I did not get something that said, made me think, hey, this is really going to help those people. And I did ask you, Bill, to look into other traffic calming. Some of the stuff I got from Fernando said that there were sort of three different ways of doing traffic calming in that. One was to color the shoulders. Another was various stripings that could be done. And a third was treatments on the boundary between the driving surface and the shoulders. And what he showed me didn't distinguish in the efficacy between these three ways of doing it. So one thing I did wonder is, do they all cost the same price? Is there good reason to believe that coloring is better than the other two? And are they cheaper? What is the situation?
Okay, in the past they have put on a different colored aggregate on the shoulders. And what this is basically an oil and stone, whereas you put oil down and then you put like a light colored stone, and it does, you know, offset the black pavement where the travel lanes are, but the bicyclists and the runners don't like it because it's easier to slip, fall, or lose control of a bicycle. One of the other things that had been brought up is the use of rumble strips. Really, rumble strips on a 10-foot wide lane, I think you'd have the neighbors in the middle of the night hearing cars going off. It's not recommended on pavement lanes that are, they have to be at least 12 feet wide to have rumble strips, and really it isn't appropriate. An appropriate texture to put on this roadway. John, any other?
We looked at some striping alternatives using a hatched pattern on the shoulders. That, again, would not have the longevity that we're talking about with this sealer. There are asphalt sealers that we could use.
It would be cheaper, though, presumably.
Yes, they would be. Yes. All of the options that Bill and I have mentioned would be cheaper.
So how much? Suppose you did striping.
I have my notes over there, but I think it was less than, what, 20-some, about 20,000 or so, I believe it was.
Do you have good reason to think that colored shoulders will do more traffic calming than striping?
I have looked at research. It really has not gotten into the use of striping like that. I'm not really familiar with using striping like that, and so I don't know if it's been studied. But the research does say that the coloring of the shoulders would be a traffic calming mechanism. It seems like the striping would also, because it would give you the visual appearance that you're not supposed to be out there on the shoulder, and you'd have that lane width to drive in.
I just, to complete this thought, it is, how often would the striping have to be redone, do you think?
Epoxy striping, which is the next step beyond what we usually do on center lines and edge lines, we're thinking would probably have a 5 or 6 year life before that would have to be redone. It would, it's not really, we're not really sure about that because of the effect of plowing at different angles on the shoulders, but because it's not a highly trafficked area, we don't think we'll get the wearing out that you would get in a lane.
Is this worthwhile postponing to examine this further or not? What's your professional opinion?
It would be keeping the contractor in limbo, sort of, if we postponed it. I don't know that that's a big deal. The weather, I do not think, would be a constraint at this point. If we were to get into some of the sealing applications, we wouldn't want them to go very late into the season because of temperatures.
Do you think in a month you could give us a definitive answer as to whether the colored shoulders are any more effective than striping?
I don't know that we would be able to come up with that. I don't know that we'd be able to say that, no.
Peter, we have to move on. I've got Kathy, Brian, Leslin, Carol, Dave, and Dooley, and if there's anything left to say, I'll put myself in there. So, Kathy.
You'll be happy to know that I'm not going to request that we postpone this. I voted against this in committee, and I have a little bit of a history with this. I was chair of the Facilities Committee at one of the times we started discussing this. The reason I voted against it at committee is because I felt that many of my colleagues and many people in the public weren't aware that the decision to color the shoulders was pretty much made de facto when we decided to make it part of the project. And the public in that area was very vocal. They have a walkable community. It reminds me of Fall Creek in the sense that, well, like many of us in Tompkins County, people are invested in their quality of life. And it was very important to them, and it became an issue that was, the support of the community was contingent upon this. That's what became pretty clear. Okay, fast forward to now, a lot of legislators don't really understand that it's pretty much part of the project. The issue that I have with it is this isn't going to go away. Everybody's going to want it. I mean, if you look on the national front, people are talking about issues like this for traffic calming. They're talking about, does widening a highway necessarily ease congestion or does it add to it? There's a lot of discussion about this. If on every highway project we have a discussion with the community, that's a good thing. We're supposed to communicate it. We should also be able to communicate with the legislators so that they know if it's made part of the project and it's not going to be part of the Ellis Hollow Road capital account because it's not reimbursed at this time by federal dollars, then if it's not part of the road maintenance program capital account, which apparently now it is not, then all the taxpayers in the county are going to be expected to pay that. It's going to be spread over the cost over the entire county. So we have to start thinking about that and talking about that in every one of these kinds of road projects because this isn't going away. It's only going to come up more. I think this is a good discussion. I'm getting tired, though. I just wanted to tell you why I voted against it in committee. I'm also going to vote against it now, and the reason is because I believe unanimity sends a sense that everything is all right, and everything is not all right. We need to improve our process on this.
I want to recall, and everybody know what I want to just mention to the public. I really thought I was going to take these issues in order that the quicker ones might be disposed of first. Well, hang in there. Brian and Leslin, Carol.
Thanks. I would just like to know, I mean, we all got emails and various correspondence on this particular issue. And I will point out that not all residents in that area were in favor of this. There was at least a couple that thought it was a waste of taxpayers' money. Having said that, I happen to have done some research today on the internet about this colored shoulders, and I read one 27-page research paper by a guy in North Carolina about a section of road in Florida where they had done this.
And that study did find that it did not materially change the speeds at which the drivers were going. Now, one thing that does, I happen to go out in your neighborhood on my way home today, and that road is beautiful. Just the condition of the road is going to be the thing that's going to increase the speeds. My question is, I'll make just a general comment. Things change. We have got a whole agenda full of things that are changed from what we originally said. And I think everybody in this room has the good faith and integrity to make a decision based on the best information that they have at the time, and their intentions are good. But things change. One thing that changed, I happen to go back also and research this project. And back in 2007, when Kathy was in charge of F&I, this very issue came up. I also dug into my personal financial stuff from 2007, and I can tell you that my own 401k was higher in 2007 than it is today. So things change. A lot of issues change. The CHA. I'll bet you in 2007 we had no idea that we were going to divest in the CHA. Things changed. We had to do it. My question is, I do believe in some sort of traffic calming measures out there, short of enforcement. The city of Ithaca, on their bike routes, have stencils off to the side with little pictures of I think a person on a bicycle or something like that, or someone had suggested diamonds, something that we as the county can do without paying a contractor to do that. I would be in favor of that if it means we have to wait a month to get figures from you folks to see what we can do in-house, because we did promise traffic calming measures. But I can see, and I've heard myself from my own constituents saying, my teeth get chattered out coming to Ithaca, and you're talking about coloring a 1.2-mile section of road. And it's hard for them to understand that. And it's hard for me to understand that. So I guess I would say, as it's currently written, I would not support it. I'm to the extent that I need to, I apologize for that. It was a promise, I guess. I wasn't here, but at some point. But things do change, and we're going to see that in the discussions from now until midnight or whatever time we get out of here. But that's what I have to say. Thanks.
Okay. Leslyn Carroll, Dave Dooley, and me. And I'm hesitant to go a second time, Pat, but I have you down. Leslyn?
At committee, I voted to bring this to the legislature, and I thought I understood what was going on. So the number has changed, and I just want someone to tell me, what does $76,000 buy me? As I understood this entire table that you had here, the monies we were looking at in committee included some of these things that was on the table. I thought we started with 136, then we went to 120, and the numbers kept fluctuating. Now we're at 76. Does it still include some of this pavement, or is this all colored shoulder? Can someone tell me what it buys?
Go ahead, John.
I'm looking at you, John. All right. You're the man.
Carol, go ahead.
I think I can take a stab at this. At committee, that $236,000 figure was the same. That's the total overrun of the project.
I don't want an explanation of their part. I just want to know what $76,000 buys now.
Some of that is covered. It was for this host of things. Some of it is covered by the contingency. Some of it they had in the highway fund, the project fund, and $76,000 is what's left that they couldn't cover that way and that they need us to allow them to transfer from the fund balance to cover this group of things, of which a portion is the road coloring, and that the road coloring is sort of the, because it happens to be the last thing we're going to do, it's kind of the only piece that could be taken out. The rest of the road is built.
How much of this $76,000, and somebody just, do you have the breakdown, John, of 76 buys, you know, so much of extra pavement and so much of colored shoulders of coloring?
On this particular project, you mean, or in general?
Just on this particular project, the $76,000 we're being asked to approve. Is this all for colored shoulders?
Joe, go ahead.
It'll buy the whole project, including the shoulders. If you didn't buy the shoulders, if we stopped now, that would save $100,000. So there's enough authority and there's enough cash if you didn't buy the shoulders. So it buys you the whole project, including the shoulders, for this add-on.
Okay, now I'm even more confused, Jeff. So one of the things that we ask in committee, and I remember Mike asking this, is how much... Because your resolution or your amendment of the committee, I think, Mike, brought it down to like $20,000 or something. What is the difference between colored shoulders and what's needed to complete the project, the paving of this? Or is it done?
The paving's done. The pavement is done. Everything in the project is done except for the shoulders. So, therefore, if you were trying to bring it in under the original budget, including that extra 160, the 10% extra, the only way to bring it in under the original budget, because you can't undo anything else, you either have to approve the extra or take out the last thing that could be eliminated, which is the shoulders.
So the colored shoulders is the $20,000.
No. All right, that's confusing.
Can I try?
Please, somebody.
There's $24,000. Left over after the new figures, mm-hmm, that can be applied to the colored shoulders, but they need $100,000, so they got to come to us for another $76,000 in order to do the colored shoulders.
Thank you very much. So $76,000 buys colored shoulders.
Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Actually, it's $93,000 that we're talking about is the transfer. If you look at the resolution, what we're looking for is $93,000 to increase the capital budget to the amount that we currently expect the project will cost when we're all done with the colored shoulders.
With the colored shoulders.
Okay, but the confusion, I'm going to guess part of the confusion is this minus $20,000 that's in the table.
Yes.
And that's there because the original budget amount was $120,000. This new process costs $100,000. So out of the original budget, you can take 20. Does that help?
Thank you, people.
Okay. All right. Carol.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. First of all, I just want to talk a little bit about budgeting, about sort of expertise of our highway department, and about when is the right time to reevaluate our method for shoulders. I'll take the last one first. I would just really appeal to you. It may be that at some point, when we do another project, we should figure out a different way we want to handle shoulders. The issue, I think, for our trust with the public is that when we agreed with the residents about this project, that was the state of the art everybody was talking about. And, and that's what we agreed to do. It may be that now that we want to do another project and F and I would be happy to take it on, or we could send it over to planning to study what's now the state of the art in rumbles and stripes and shoulders. But there's evidence out there in support of all of those theories. But this is what the residents agreed to. I don't think that enough has changed that we should go back and rewrite this, or that we should debate on the floor now or send this back for another month where we're not going to really have the answer. I think it'll take longer to evaluate that for our next project. On the staff and our budgeting, or budgeting in general. I mean, highway projects are expensive, which is like why I like to be cautious about which ones we're going to approve in the future. I don't know what I'm going to be in here with approving for our upcoming budget on new projects. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking in the order of $2 million, $1.8 on this. And I'm going to be cautious about taking on new ones, but this is one we've got almost done without a lot of problems. I had an office budget when I had an office. It was like $1,000, and I had to project in advance how much was I going to need for pencils and how much was I going to need for paper and how much for my airline tickets. And, you know, and I had a plan of work, and if I couldn't finish it all at the end of the year, the airline tickets went up, I had to go back to my director and say, can I spend a little more, or do you want me to not do the plan of work? And I think that's what they're doing, and in $1.8 million to be off by this amount, given the vagaries of the market in asphalt, I don't think that, you know, I don't want people to come away feeling like we feel that they've done a poor job on the budgeting here. So those are the three things that I've heard. And I really do hope people support this the way it is.
Dave, then Julie, then me.
Okay. The guy that never says anything is going to say something. First of all, can you give me an idea how much the colored shoulders actually help nighttime?
Help at nighttime?
Help you see where you're going. Help you see where the edge of the road is. Do they buy you anything after dark?
Well, we do have the edge line there already, and so it would be still apparent at night that color area is different. It's not reflectorized like the edge line is,
okay.
But you could see the color difference in your headlights, I would think.
Okay. Just trying to envision the striping scenario, it seems like that would be a huge distraction. I don't think I'd want to see it there if I was going down the road in a car or a bus or something. I know we made a commitment to the people in the area to do this, but as others have said, things have changed. I guess that $100,000, Bill, can you tell me how many miles of average county road we're going to repair for $100,000?
I could put an inch and a half on probably a mile and a half of two-lane road.
Works for me. I'm going to vote against it.
All right, Dooley?
Well, many years ago, I championed colored shoulders as a traffic calming measure. I was convinced that where it had been tried, it made a difference psychologically to drivers. And we tried briefly to have painted shoulders on part of Warren Road approaching the schools. It doesn't last long if you paint it, as any striping doesn't last long. And we didn't keep it colored. But while it was there, I experienced that sense of the road, the driving lane is this wide, and the rest is not the driving lane. That brief trial was enough for me to believe that all the theoretical papers and research made sense. So I champion colored shoulders. I champion them for Hanshaw Road, where traffic calming is also going to be necessary. I champion them for this project. And hearing Brian say what a great road it looks like now, it's smooth, you can really go. The idea to not try to counter that with colored shoulders seems really irresponsible to me. In addition to which, several people have pointed out that we made a commitment to the public and things haven't changed, that we shouldn't keep our commitments, in my view. This amount of money would come out of the highway fund balance. It doesn't come out of the general funds. It can only be used for highways. And for us to renege on what we told the community seems to me a really, really damaging thing for the county in the future. So I hope that those of you who just see that it will save us some money and maybe we can use that money for something else will pause and think about what I've said. I think it would be really negligent to go back on our word and make that road less safe with our beautiful, smooth blacktop and nothing else. The striping and patterns, diamonds, don't have the same psychological effect. You look at them, and they are a little distracting, but it doesn't make you think that that's not pavement. It's just a different feeling. And the guideline that will, this reflective white that John referred to between the colored shoulder and the black pavement will still demarcate what the driving lane is, and the colored shoulder will look like it's not part of that. So I hope you will vote to let the highway department spend the money they need to spend to complete the project as it's designed. I'm not happy with the aggregate in place of the colored asphalt, but that's what they've done to save $20,000 and bring this down. So I will accept that, although it's not my first choice.
I'm going to say something then. Pat, Jim, Peter, and I hope we can vote. I did also ask Fernando for research and looked online myself. It seems that there's not much data because these shoulders aren't used that much in this country, much more in Europe. There is good information, apparently, on sort of the effect of narrowing, visually narrowing roads in other ways and more in terms of foliage, or bump outs or different things that do tend to give the sense of a narrower road. Brian, the study that, I don't know if the study you found was, had that red, Hunter in 1998 had actually the red shoulders, right? Mm-hmm. Red. It was interesting because that went from no shoulder pavement to pavement. So the road, in fact, the paved surface was considerably wider, and yet they saw no increase in speed. And that's the point, is that even though the pavement was wider, the speed didn't go up. So that's the way I saw it. And I asked Fernando about that, and he said, yes, that's true.
That is true.
So that's the point, is that a wide black pavement is going to increase the speed, and this will instead maintain it at what it would otherwise be. That's the point. Okay, so anyway, I would just say there was a group that was very eager to pursue a lawsuit at sort of midpoint in this project when before the final design was proposed, and then that opposition went away when the final design was developed by Fisher. I think one of the issues also is that we approved this project, gave final approval, I think, last July. And that's really late in the season to be approving a project. And then that's what led to the delay over a second season and $90,000 worth of extra cost. So, unfortunately, the road had really gotten so bad that they didn't want to delay even longer. But I think, you know, we have to just take these kinds of decisions really seriously and try to make sure we do our own approvals in time so that we're not starting a project in middle or late July in the future. So I have also, Fernando has said that there's a lot of anecdotal evidence about, anecdotal stories about the effect of these shoulders. So even though there's not a lot of, you know, formal studies done, and I think that they do have a beneficial effect. Pat, Jim, and Peter.
Thank you, Martha, and I will be brief. One of the questions that I was asked at our town hall meeting when I talked about the budget for 2012 was, what is the county doing right now to contain costs, to operate more efficiently, to help to reduce that gap before we actually even get to the budget process? So I fully understand what people are saying in terms of the commitment that was made, but I have to come to this position partly from my own experience, my own life experience, and I certainly know that there have been times when I, whether perhaps for myself, have made a promise to myself, so to speak, that I'm at the point where I need to get a new car, and then something happens. So,
it's so late.
I understand, Martha, but I waited too.
But you've already spoken.
I had to make a change in that. Or I made a promise to someone else that I couldn't keep. I think the simple fact that we made the promise has to be put in the context of the broader picture of what's happening with the county. I really believe that intelligent people, as our residents are here in Tompkins County, can understand what we're facing and can deal with this if we are not able to do this.
All right, Jim and Peter, you've both already spoken. If there's something new, Jim?
I would like to call the question.
Okay, is there a second? It's been seconded. Well, there's no debate on calling the question, Peter, although you were in the...
No, I'm seconding it.
Oh, it's been seconded. Kathy seconded it.
Oh, I didn't say it.
Oh, okay. All right, all in favor of calling the question?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes 14-1. Okay. All right, all in favor, this is a short form roll call. Right, Kathy? Okay. So.
Ask for a full roll call, please.
We should do a full roll call. Mr. Robison? We're voting on the resolution.
Yeah, no. No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
No.
Ms. McAsee?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Ms. Pryor?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
7 ayes, 8 noes. Okay.
I couldn't hear what.
Seven ayes, fails 7-8.
Okay, thank you.
I think we'd better take a recess. I know that other staff are waiting for other items, and obviously the public is waiting, but we don't do very well if we don't have a little break here. Please come back at 8:20. Please, the quicker people can come back, the better. Thank you.